Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Science Fiction Prototyping Podcast. I am Brian David Johnson, and in this episode, we are examining this idea of sentient tools, and really this notion of science fiction and the coming age of sentient tools. Now, the idea of sentient tools is something that I've been working on now for a while. I've talked about it in some other podcasts. I've written about it in a couple of papers with some of the work that I've been doing with Frost and Sullivan, where I'm a fellow and a futurist. And the idea of sentient tools, to be sort of simple about it, is to say that it is the thing that comes after what is coming now. That sentient tools are the thing that comes after smart cities, the thing that comes after artificial intelligence, big data, autonomous vehicles, all of these areas in technology that we're talking about and looking at now, that's saying, well, what happens when we've achieved those things? What happens when we have all smart cities and we have autonomous movement and we have autonomous cars and autonomous transport? What happens when we have meaningful big data? And ultimately, what happens when we have tools that are aware and can think? What does that world look like? They're not only aware of where they are, but they're also aware socially of who they're interacting with. And these are, I think, are incredibly powerful tools and something that's coming. And what does it mean with science fiction? How can we use science fiction to imagine what it would be like to live in that world? What would it be like to act and interact with these tools? You know, these tools are designed to work with people, but what would it actually be like? So before we start to get into that, one of the things I want to start with is some of the foundational research. And I want to bring in one of my colleagues at Frost & Sullivan. His name is Richard Sear. He's a vice president and a partner at Frost & Sullivan. And there we actually take trends and we look at markets and we look at the collision of the two and what that might actually mean for growth. So this is where the idea of sentient tools came from, is myself collaborating with my other colleagues at Frost & Sullivan, but also working with Richard and looking at all of these trends and all of these different areas. So I've invited Richard to come on the podcast today and talk a little bit about those trends and talk a little bit about what it might mean for the future. Hello, Richard, and thanks for joining us on the Science Fiction Prototyping Podcast. So, Richard, you know, on this podcast, we're talking about this idea that we've been working on around sentient tools, you know, and the notion of sentient tools is all about what comes next. What is the thing that happens after smart cities? What happens after IoT? What happens when we have big data and artificial intelligence and all the things that people are talking about now? It's sort of, what was it be like to sort of live in an age of you know, post-autonomous cars? And this is that idea of what sentient tools are and thinking about how we imagine these possible futures. And one of the things that you've really had a front seat on is sort of the growth of all of these different areas. And certainly in the work that we do at Frost & Sullivan, being able to see growth in all of these different areas. And one of the areas that you have really, really done a lot of work in recently is really looking at smart cities. And you've been doing a lot of work in how smart cities are coming about and actually bringing about smart cities. So as you look at that, what have you been seeing with smart cities?
Yes, I mean, I think it's kind of a loop, you know, Brian David. I think, you know, at the moment we have this buzz term smart cities and everybody loves it because, you know, it's more of a product-centric approach. You know, you've got companies coming in, you know, trying to sell, you know, city, whether it's the municipality or the city at large, you know, products essentially, whether it's smart parking solutions or an ITS platform, an intelligent transportation platform, or whatever it might be. And I think we're going to see sort of a little bit of a full circle. So, you know, at the moment is this product-centric approach. And, you know, I think very much next wave is going to be back to sort of, you know, this more of a living city-based approach. So, you know, technology is flooding cities. It's improving things like security and policing. It's in future helping cities future-proof infrastructure. It's sort of, you know, knocking down the sort of the gulf that we've had in terms of infrastructure in cities being really poor, and sort of, you know, rapidly updating it, if you like. But once you've done that, you've still got to think about the residents that live in those, you know, cities. So I think the next wave that we'll see in the next sort of 4 or 5 years are more solutions geared towards livable cities. You know, so how do you organise and optimise a citizen's life better? So, you know, on the 8 pillars that we have, you know, 2 of them are really much more citizen-centric: smart citizens and smart governance. The other things are like energy, transportation, infrastructure. But the least amount of money goes into the citizens and the governance piece. So I think that's going to be a huge, huge area for us, Brando.
So, Richard, so as we start to look at smart cities, and we're starting to get more and more smart cities, arguably some are smarter than others, but what you're saying then is that the change that we're going to be beginning to see, and really when smart cities start to come online, we'll start to see them shift and be more about people and citizens and less about technology and solutions, and that's one of the things that we should keep an eye out for.
I 100% agree. I mean, I feel like we've sort of been through this wave with, you know, period with sort of the internet and this Internet of Things revolution. Sort of, you know, humans, we've adopted things rapidly, but a lot of things have sort of just been in the kind of the background, and now we're starting to see what the impact of some of those, you know, technological progressions are having on society and people. And, you know, the city is basically a condensed microcosm of that, right? I mean, you've got people that could be 400,000 people living in the city up to a Mexico City or a Tokyo, you know, city with 20 plus million people living in it. They are microcosms, but hugely focused microcosms. And we're starting to see the impact of that, you know, sort of this heterogeneous society type of play where sort of the polarization of society is happening because of technology. Now, cities are supposed to, you know, be places where that's supposed to be solved. So when a smart city for us truly becomes intelligent, it's not just connected, but it's that every citizen has been focused on. It's like web provision within cities, for example. Often cities will say, well, we're smart because we're connected. Well, it's not really the case. You know, a smart city is not instantly smart just because lots of people can get online. Providing super fast web access is just one small component of it, right? It's really about how do you provide that access to the person with a solution and a service that enriches their lives. So it's more of a dedicated, if you like, you know, provision of services down to a citizen level. We'll know when people at that level, at every level in a city, will have access, will be able to use services, and these things happen like we receive electricity. It's just, it's in the background.
Right, and that's one of the things I like, your kind of focus on sort of the citizen and the people and sort of that human impact. That's one of the things that we use science fiction prototyping to do all the time, is to look at that human impact. And it's kind of interesting, yeah, when you look at smart cities, and that's really the high watermark, is to sort of understand that impact on the citizens and kind of play out what that means for different cities. But one of the things I also wanted to ask you about, Richard, was one other area that we've been doing quite a bit of research in and looking at, is this notion of Internet of Things and big data, right? You've got all of these different things that are now kind of connected to each other. And I know this kind of relates to your work in smart cities, but, you know, you've got this idea that you've got all of this sort of interconnectivity, and this, especially for this notion of sentient tools and what it might mean for people, this is a big, big component of it. So what are you seeing in that area?
Yeah, no, so I can agree with you more. I mean, the sentient tools approach is really kind of fascinating for us because, you know, Internet of Things is I really have never liked the term, but I understand that it was a necessity to get us to a point where we could sort of understand what ultimately sentient tools would be. I mean, things, you know, it's a very specific thing. It is a device or it is a product, whatever it might be, but it is a thing that is necessarily connected. Some are connected, of course, to the network, and many are not. So it's sort of a bit of a ubiquitous term that I'm not a huge fan of. So I think this next level, of course, where we start to see self-learning through all of these, you know, not devices, but the data that is being essentially generated by the aggregation of all of these devices, the data that ends up communicating, you know, each other. It's the data that speaks to each other. It's the open systems that are able to connect one piece of data to another piece of data to be allowed to be accessed by somebody to create value. And I think that's, you know, for me, you know, we'll take that next step from IoT to more of sort of this, I don't know what you call it, you know, Brian, David, I'm sure somebody is super intelligent, way more intelligent than me, will come up with a really good term for it. But, you know, whether it's personalized systems, I have no idea. But I do know that I think it is about the data that is speaking to each other and becoming much more predictive of us and enabling us to use these amazing technological tools that are around us much more optimally than we're able to do today. At the moment, it's a little bit still hard work. I think everything is going to become significantly more, not simplistic, but certainly easier for us to do in all sort of, you know, in all sort of demographics, from youth to the elderly. It become much more intuitive.
So as we discuss this notion of sentient tools and how we can use science fiction and science fiction prototyping to imagine these possible futures, in the work that you've been doing, working with people and companies and education institutions and cities and sort of you name it, sort of groups of people, what do you think is key as they start to imagine what it might be like to live in an age of post-autonomy and post-big data, to live in this time of sentient tools? How should they be thinking about that?
Companies or people?
Companies, people, education, communities. Like, what is the what are some of the steps?
Yeah. So I think that there's a few things. Well, first off, they need to start thinking about it pretty quickly. I mean, as you know better than anybody in your experience at Intel and other entities that you've been involved with, things have moved fast in the last 10, 15 years. The next 10 years is going to make it look like, you know, babies crawling out of a crib. It is the speed of which this transition is happening is so profoundly fast that's the number one mistake that people are going to make first off, is that they're going to sit there and think about it and not actually start, you know, kind of creating a plan to have a plan to do something. And so, you know, our first thing is that, you know, you've got to start immersing yourself in information. You know, the more information that you can get around the things like you're talking about today with me and the other things that you do, you know, the better off folks are going to be. I think the first level is always sort of opening the mind and listening to, you know, many different perspectives. And then, at least from my perspective, you know, you have to start creating, you know, plausible scenarios. I'm not talking about traditional scenario plan, but plausible scenarios, credible scenarios that are data-driven, that allows you to start to sort of map out how soon many of these things will take to place. You've got to use the data that is at people's disposal. There's lots of it. We generate a significant amount of information, and other people do too. But, you know, we've got to start credibly building these plausible realities towards, you know, these end goals that are coming much faster than people think. But there is no doubt in my mind, when I go into companies, I've been doing this over 20 years, the number one failure point is always people sitting on their hands and not actually, you know, actually acting. Brian, David, most people are too busy finding fascination in the things that we talk about rather than doing things about the things that we talk about.
Right, and I think that's why science fiction prototyping becomes such a powerful tool, because for so many people it's a lack of imagination. And as we know, if you can't imagine these futures and you can't imagine these plausible futures actually based on fact, then you have no roadmap and you really don't know what to do. And I think that's why this sort of science fiction prototyping, this way of thinking based upon the data, is so important. But Richard, listen, thank you so much for being on the Science Fiction Prototyping podcast. We really appreciate it. So you can see why Richard and I work well together and get along. I like his idea of that the way that you prepare is, number one, you immerse yourself in all the data, and then number two, you start thinking about these plausible scenarios. And very specifically, those plausible scenarios are science fiction prototyping. It's, I think, the power of science fiction based on science fact to imagine what it would feel like to be a human and act and interact with these tools. These sentient tools will be designed to act and interact with people, not to replace people. So what would that be like? What would it be like to have a car, an autonomous car that knows you, knows how to interact with you, knows how to interact with your partner or your kids or other passengers? What would it be like in the manufacturing world to actually have a tool that can think? Not trying to replace you, not trying to replace your labor, but actually working with you. And more importantly, how do we educate and train the next generation of workers so that they can actually work and collaborate with these tools? I think it's a question and really something that's tailor-made for science fiction prototyping. And it's one of the things I think in subsequent columns that will continue to explore this, that the power of science fiction prototyping is that it allows us to look at the human impact, the cultural impact, the ethical and legal impact. And I think for sentient tools, it starts to even give us the possible requirements for, well, what do we want? What sort of future do we want when we have tools that can think and that are aware and that are socially interacting with us? What's acceptable and what's not acceptable? What's acceptable in the workplace and what's acceptable at home? What's acceptable when it's driving around and taking care of our children, or when it is, you know, working to possibly help save human lives? I think there's an unending amount of questions that you could ask about this coming age of sentient tools, and I think we're going to continue to use science fiction prototyping as a way to imagine what this might look like and the impact might have. So as I always do in the podcast, I'm going to encourage you. You can always reach out to me. You can reach me at briandavid.johnson@frost.com, or you can follow me on Twitter. I'm BDJ Futurist. And I want to encourage you to send me your ideas. What would it be like to act and interact with these tools in this coming age of sentient tools? What ideas do you have about possible science fiction stories? I've always gotten always great responses from this column and great feedback, and so I think here is a new area for us to delve into and really use the power of science fiction prototyping. So I want to thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. I encourage you, if this is your first time with the podcast, to go back and look at our backlog of podcasts where we've dove in and looked at other areas of the intersection between sort of technology and science fiction. And I look forward to hearing from you online. Thank you so much.